Hello and welcome to the Euractiv Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
I'm Julia Dam.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News team. So I would say the key theme of this week can be summed up in two words. Who wants to guess what those two words are? Don't all jump at once.
Is it for us or for our listeners?
For you. They can't. No, our listeners can't respond.
No, because for instance, on YouTube, you know, there are the...
Are we on YouTube?
No, YouTube, other podcasts. there are people who say, okay, I give you 5 seconds to think about it.
Oh, right. Okay.
Pause the video and, if you need more time.
Yeah, pause the video. See, Julia is an expert of YouTube.
You're both
video.
Big fans, clearly. Okay. All right, so let me do that again. So we've got two keywords. Have a think about it for 5 seconds, everyone. See what you
see. 5 seconds is a lot. I mean.
What, you said 5 seconds?
Yeah, no, Julia said 5 seconds.
Fine. Gerardo, give the game away. What are we talking about here?
We're talking about food security.
Dun, dun, dun. It's back. It is back.
It was right. I was right.
Yes, of course you're right. Oh, what a surprise.
Did I win some prizes or no?
You won the prize of telling everyone what's going on and why we're talking about food security this week.
Yeah, food security is a concept that is included in the European Treaty. No, I'm joking. Food security, of course, because of the situation in Ukraine, the invasion of Russia, put the spotlight on this concept of food security that for a little period was even considered no longer that important in the EU by some member of the College of Commissioners. So basically there's an increasing a crisis situation when it comes to both the reduced trade from Ukraine, which alone accounts for instance, 90% of EU wheat imports and 13% of oilseed imports. And it's a lot. And there's also the situation with the sanctions to Belarus and Russia that involves, of course, like, for instance, a sanction on potash, which is a key component of a fertilizer, and this is basically adding up to the already existing pressure when it comes to the input price fertilizer, plant protection products, and so on.
So basically, we're having problems importing, trading in food, and we're potentially having problems growing it as well. So
yeah, otherwise we're fine, you know, all the other,
but otherwise
other
everything's
areas.
Fine. Yeah, exactly. And actually this was, it was compounded, all of these fears were compounded this week because the Ukraine's government actually introduced export licensing of key foodstuffs, including wheat, corn and poultry meat, and also sunflower oil. So the fears have kind of been a little bit flamed this week over food security.
Yeah, and also even some countries in Europe adopted this kind of zero quota to export, like Hungary. This was actually quite criticized by the Commission because, of course, it created a fragmentation in the measures adopted by countries to cope with the disruption caused by the situation in Ukraine. For instance, this also, we already anticipated this last week, created a debate in the EU bubble on whether to reconsider some Commission policies. It's not only about agri-food, it's also about the energy. Actually, in energy,
the general green goals we're talking about here, the sustainability goals.
Yeah, so basically, you know, prioritizing food security or security of supply, again, no matter if it's food supplies, but also gas or other energy sources. Prioritizing these security of supply over sustainable goals. This was anticipated by Wojciechowski, Agriculture Commissioner Wojciechowski last week, and Julien de Normandie, who's the French agriculture minister. They had an extraordinary meeting, informal meeting with the other EU agriculture ministers. They, some minister actually put forward the idea to, like for instance, to set aside 10% of the so-called landscape feature, so basically the agricultural land for certain
biodiversity,
biodiversity, and to change it to basically protein crop, also because as you were saying before, there's a shortage of oil seeds, but this week there was some kind of counterattack of the Green Deal
proponents,
Avengers.
Avengers. That's where you're going with that. Interesting.
No, actually, Julia could tell us a bit more, because one of these Avengers was the German agriculture minister.
Yeah, I still have to come up with what his Avenger name
would
be.
Yeah, what would his superhero name be? Yeah, interesting. Well, okay, we'll think about it. Come back to it.
If we were on YouTube, we'd say write your ideas in the comments. But but basically,
so German guys, minister not on YouTube. I hate to break this to you guys. Twice now this has come up.
Fine. Yeah, but basically, German minister Cem Özdemir is quite passionate about defending the green goals. He's come out several times now with statements saying very clearly that he does not think the current crisis is a reason to question the green goals. He said basically, we all care a lot about Ukraine. We think of the people there every day, but the crisis is not the reason to question our green goals and to not make agriculture more sustainable. And also, he's basically said that he doesn't see the big impact on European food markets. He's basically saying the EU and Germany will be fine. The impact will mostly be on third countries who are already facing food shortages in some areas of the world because of droughts and things like that. So these countries are much more dependent on food imports, will be much more affected, and we should focus on helping them, while we will probably be fine in the EU and should not question the Green Deal because of it.
And he's not the only one, actually.
I know where you want to go right now, but before
jumping in somewhere else.
Let's hear from, because actually there was the plenary week in the European Parliament with some extraordinary meetings of some EU parliamentary committees. There was an extraordinary meeting of the ENVI committee, and Frans Timmermans, again another one of the Green Deal Avengers, defended the Green Deal goals, even in the food, green food goals of the Farm to Fork and the biodiversity strategies. Let's hear from him how he defended it.
Please don't believe in the illusion that helping food production, that you would help food production by making it less sustainable, by not opting for farm to fork strategies, by not making it more resilient in terms of the natural environment and the food production. We need to reduce our dependency of potash coming from elsewhere, including Russia and Belarus, so that we need to reduce the fertilizers we need. We need to reduce the pesticides we need, etc., etc. So also here, I would argue that farm to fork is part of the answer and not part of the problem.
And now, Natasha, you can actually say what you wanted to say before. So you wanted to link what Özdemir said about the fact that this kind of this war in Ukraine could have a bigger effect on actually on other part of the world.
Yeah, before you stole my segue, I was going to jump on that and say, actually, he's not the only one to be saying
this. She's a bit bitter.
Yeah. I'm a bit bitter about that.
Yeah. I don't know why.
I'll move past it. It's okay, I can put it behind me. But yeah, he's not the only one that actually shared the same view, was talking about the wider ramifications, you know, looking outside the EU. Because actually this week, Gerardo and I spoke with Pekka Pesonen, who's the Secretary General of EU Farmers Association in Kopacajeka. And he was saying exactly the same thing. He was actually saying that, you know, he's maybe less concerned about what's going to happen in terms of the food supplies in the EU. He was saying, you know, the EU is unlikely to go hungry as a consequence of the war in Ukraine. But he did say that he does see it having, you know, his main concern is that it will have a devastating impact on certain areas of Africa and the Middle East. You're speaking about North Africa, Egypt, and a few other places. And he was saying this could have serious disruption at the international level. So this was actually his main concern as a fallout from the war.
Yeah, yeah. And also he mentioned the fact that we're talking about areas of the world where
political upheavals
happened quite recently, actually, like the Arab Springs and so on. And of course, food prices and food shortages could have a political effect.
Definitely.
In this area. So it's a bit of quite strong debate, confrontation, you know, in the aftermath of this invasion in the EU bubble, because on one side you have the stakeholders, but also politicians that are basically trying to take advantage of this food shortage situation in order to push a bit the previous agenda. So basically because it's not new that, for instance, the largest group in the European Parliament, the EPP, so the center-right party in the European Parliament, it's not a mystery, or it's not a secret that this party has always been quite vocal against certain objectives of the Farm to Fork strategy, always been, not just now. And they basically reorientating the debate that we thought was moving away from this, the necessity of having more sustainable goals. But now they're basically representing the same arguments of 2 years ago. And they even asked to put on hold the implementation of the Farm to Fork strategy. There was a note by Herbert Dorfman, an Italian MEP, who's the spokesperson on agricultural matters of the EPP. And he was basically saying this. He was basically asking to, for the moment, put in the fridge the implementation of the Farm to Fork strategy. We actually have one big appointment in 2 weeks, no?
We do.
Yeah, the 23rd of March, we have the unveiling of the SUD directive, so the Sustainable Pesticide Directive, one of the cornerstones of the Farm to Fork strategy.
Actually, there's a lot going on the 23rd of this month.
Yeah,
it's a big day this month. Also because it will be the official meeting, while we're talking about food security, the official kickoff meeting for this new European Food Security Crisis Preparedness and Response Mechanism, which is not a very catchy name. But anyway, we need to find a way to refer to this a bit better. But I'm going to call it the Food Security Crisis Meeting, maybe.
Are we launching a poll on Twitter with our listeners? trying to get a better name for this platform.
Like launch a petition.
If you ask people on Twitter, they're going to come up with all kinds of names. So I think that's dangerous.
It's going to be like Boaty McBoatface all over again. Yeah.
Or we can do it on our YouTube channel.
Right.
Sure. We absolutely need a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So much for missing
out. The podcast is the past, guys. YouTube is the future.
Well, while you guys work on that, I'm going to explain what this food security crisis meeting is and was, because actually there was an ad hoc meeting called this week on food security in light of all of the disruptions that are happening with Ukraine. They decided to kind of bring forward a, you know, a bit of an impromptu meeting that they had ahead of what was scheduled on the 23rd. And during this meeting, it was a closed doors meeting, but we've spoken to a number of different sources that were inside the meeting about what happened.
We cannot mention. So we protect our sources. This is for our listeners that are actually our sources. So consider how good we treat you.
Okay, yeah. So, and the sources that we spoke with, basically they told us kind of what went down in the meeting and what the main themes were and what the different positions of everyone were. And one of the things, one of the kind of themes that really emerged from this is that clearly the commission is not bowing down to pressure to change or halt or temporarily put on hold the farm to fork strategy or any of the other EU green goals. You know, the commission took a very strong stance in this meeting this week, basically saying, you know, this is not up for negotiation. This is not on the table for discussion. It's not something that they're going to consider as a possibility. So they were very, very strong on that and very firm. And there are also a number of other key topics that were raised during the meeting, which I would sum up with the phrase feed and seed, that being animal feed and also seed for sowing, both of which the EU has very dwindling supplies of. So there was a number of, you know, a lot of people were raising the alarm about this issue, especially for certain member states in the south mainly. So we're talking about here Cyprus, Portugal and Spain, who were saying that they run the risk of exhausting stocks of animal feed by Easter if something's not done, and we need to look at alternative sourcing for this. So it's quite a strong statement.
No, yeah, I mean it's interesting because even on the mainstream media, we tend to address the situation, the disruption caused by the war, by saying that of course Ukraine and Russia are the two biggest agricultural powers when it comes to the cereal production. But actually, so people might think that the real problem is with, you know, bread, pasta, biscuits, but actually the problem is animal feed. So it's not super intuitive, but the real problems, in terms of food shortages, could actually be faced by the livestock sector.
But also on seeds. I mean, we have sowing season that's, you know, rapidly upon us, and it, you know, it's taking a slightly longer term vision than, you know, food supply right now and right here and right now. But if we can't get enough seed into the EU for sowing, then we're talking about, you know, longer ramifications into the harvest season, into even, you know, next year. Or so that's another thing to keep in mind, that it's not the here and now, it's not an immediate necessarily, the immediate food supply.
That's another great remark, because again, we tend to consider on the market the, you know, the agricultural commodities at a par of commodities, you know, but actually compared to industrial products, they have some very specific timing. As you said, that the stages in order to get the final product, the final agricultural product. And at the same time, it's not only about, you know, since we're talking about a commodity market, it's also influenced, the price of this foodstuff is also influenced by other external factors, like we mentioned before, the cost of inputs, but also, for instance, the currency. You know, for instance, there was an issue with the wheat some months ago because the price of the euro was bigger than the one on dollars, and this created problem with the wheat coming from Canada, and it created a very short shortage of wheat for for the Italian past producers some months ago, and this was caused also because of some stock issues in Canada, but also because of currency fluctuations. No, so it's super complicated. Commodity market is super complicated, and in the end, farmers are going to pay the price if nothing will be done, because there was also this discussion on the table what the Commission could do in order to alleviate the burden on farmers at the moment. There was actually the presentation of another communication on energy, on the crisis in the energy sector, which affected farmers. Tash, you know more about this.
I do, yeah. It was this communication. It's evolved somewhat, this communication, from some previous drafts that we got our hands on in light of the whole situation that's happening in Ukraine. But basically, this communication was addressing the energy crisis in the EU. And obviously, as you've explained, as Gerard has explained, this has a huge impact on the farming sector. And one of the Commission's responses on this is basically to really push on biomethane, or biogas, as it's known. And so the idea is actually to double the objective. So in the Fit for 55 package, there was this objective to create 17 billion cubic meters of biogas per year by 2030. And the Commission's actually decided to double this. And now, so why are we talking about this in terms of agri? Well, because this is produced by agricultural waste, manure and straw and things from the farm. And it's seen as a way to try and bolster the sector against, energy fluctuations and try and make it a bit more independent. So that is one way that the Commission is, this is a little bit more long-term, this goal. In terms of the here and now, this meeting this week was more about finding alternative markets immediately. There was conversations on trying to change the rules around, maximum residue levels on pesticides, things like the relaxation of some rules on GMOs, basically with a view to look at places like to source from places such as the US, which have, different levels of acceptability in these respects. So that's a lot of different options are on the table right now. The idea is that the Commission, will gather these all up, collect them all up, and will be considered by the EU executive in the upcoming Special Committee on Agriculture, the SCAR meeting, which is on Monday the 14th.
So I was thinking, at least here in Berlin, we're seeing the first few days that actually feel like spring. So
Brussels too, unbelievably.
Wow.
Unbelievably. We've seen some for the first time as like emerging, blinking into the sun after like months and months.
It's a miracle.
Of darkness. It is.
It's like everyone's running around in like swimsuits, basically.
It's a miracle.
Yeah, February in Brussels was really foggy. Yeah. Like,
so was the whole of last year. barely remember seeing sun the entire year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But February particularly foggy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically I was thinking this makes it a good moment to talk about something spring themed this week, namely a flower. Ooh. And with the sun coming out and everything, what could be more fitting than talking about sunflowers?
Wow. One of my favorite flowers. I love them.
Yeah. So sadly, though, there's also more of a somber reason why sunflowers are talked about a lot at the moment. And it's because they're actually intimately linked to Ukraine and to Russia's war there. So you might have seen or heard of this video that made the rounds on Twitter, and I'm sure in other places too recently, where this Ukrainian woman actually went up to a Russian soldier and offered him sunflowers to put into his pocket so that when he dies on Ukrainian ground, sunflowers will grow there. So quite a story, I think. But it's not a coincidence that the woman picked sunflower seeds specifically for this, and also that people all over the world have been using sunflowers as a symbol to show their solidarity with Ukraine. And the reason why this is a symbol that's so linked with Ukraine is actually agri-related.
Yeah, indeed, because sunflowers have been grown in Ukraine for a long time, since the 18th century, to produce sunflower seeds and oil. And as a defining feature of Ukraine's landscape, they've become an unofficial national symbol, as well as a symbol of peace. Sadly, it is therefore also quite symbolic how Russia's attack on the country has impaired the production of sunflowers in Ukraine. Both Ukraine and Russia are major exporters of sunflower oil and together make up a majority of worldwide exports. In the face of the war, sunflower oil is now among the key goods for which Ukraine has halted export in order to safeguard domestic supply. And with Russia, supply chains are interrupted due to the deteriorating relations and the sanction. And there have been reports that cargo ships have stopped calling at Russian ports for sunflower oil. Several EU countries have already been ringing the alarm about looming sunflower shortages. For instance, there was a message from a warning from the European Vegetable Oil Association, FEDOL. The roughly 200,000 tons per month of EU supply of sunflower seed oil from Ukraine has stopped being shipped to European ports. And yeah, that's a lot. And again, according to an estimate from the association, between 35 and 45% of sunflower oil refined in the EU comes from Ukraine, and there is no immediate solution to this disruption in sunflower seed oil, as of course it is unclear if and how trade will be able to resume.
Actually, fun fact, there are even been some supermarkets this week that have started restricting the amount of sunflower oil that each consumer can have to 5 liters. It was in Spain, I know I saw this.
Yeah, and even in Italy, if I may, it's there were some companies that are basically using as raw material this Ukraine oil. They already exhausted the stock. And it's in the Ravenna, so basically in a very beautiful part of Italy called Romagna.
Mm. But I suppose the question is, why are sunflowers such a key product? Well, sunflower oil is used in food preparation, things like frying and cooking oil, but also for salad dressing. But it can also be used as fuel when it's mixed with diesel. So it's a very, very useful oil. And the extraction of oil also produces seed meal. That's like crushed seeds, which are used as animal feed and fertilizer and also for fuel. So this is like a multi-pronged, useful resource. And of course, the seeds themselves are also well-liked and also a healthy snack, especially popular in the Mediterranean region, also Eastern European region and Asian countries. But Yulia, what kind of things can be made out of sunflower that could be fun and interesting for our listeners?
Yeah, I was going to bring two things that I heard of.
This is not planned at all.
Two things I found interesting reading about the technology made out of sunflower and that I would absolutely try whenever I get the chance. So there's actually a type of halva, which is basically a type of sweet.
Like a Middle Eastern sweet. I think it's made from sesame normally. Yeah,
I've tried it made from sesame, and it's absolutely delicious. But apparently it's also a variety that's made out of sunflower seeds, so that sounds quite delicious. And second thing is that sunflower butter is also used. Sunflower butter is used as a substitute for peanut butter for people who are allergic to nuts. So apparently it tastes similar. And can this be used as a substitute? So that sounds quite interesting too.
Interesting.
Actually, guys, I mean, it makes me think of a short video that I watched on TikTok. Yeah, because I'm using TikTok
because you're trying to be young and cool and hip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. After
trying being the operative word.
When I'm not on YouTube watching.
Oh God.
Yeah, I'm on TikTok, and there was this guy. It's basically explaining. It was a tutorial on how they used to. I haven't verified the historical information, so it might be a scam. This guy
that's
is
exactly what you want to hear from a journalist, isn't it?
This guy,
verifying my source.
I'm not
wearing
the journalist hat 24
hours. Okay, so it's just speculating how
yeah,
is
it was, and the guys, it was basically explaining how they used to bake bread during the Depression, in the 30s, and in order to spare some eggs, so they basically used peanut butter instead of as an oil, no? And he basically did this bread with peanut butter. So maybe we can do a bread with this sunflower butter, in our YouTube channel, of course.
When we start doing recipes as well.
Yeah.
A weekly recipe as well as a weekly podcast type thing.
That would be a great idea.
I know. I regret saying that out loud already. Gerardo, that was a joke.
No, well, you committed to.
The idea is planted. It's not coming back.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, after I saw Janusz Wojciechowski, the Agriculture Commissioner, participating to this live cook show at the... What was it? The...
I know you've never let this down. Like, you've never stopped talking about
the
this.
Expo.
You're devastated that you didn't do this first.
Yeah. And I already have the entire season of my first series on.
Maybe we could collect all of the flavors of the week over the season and then try to make a recipe with them.
Ooh.
So we could get sunflower seeds. And
sugar, chocolate, and
yeah, exactly. Well, so far we've actually got
first one.
So far it works out quite well, I think.
I mean, sugar and chocolate, yeah, they go pretty well.
There was the cinnamon. Super.
There you go. We can make a cake. Yeah, next week we have to do flour so that we can make a cake.
So that's all from us this week. This week, the podcast is produced by Euractiv's agri-food team, Gerardo Fortuna, Natasha Foot, and Julia Dam, with the technical support of Evie Chiori.
This podcast is also available on all major streaming platforms, including Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.
And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agriculture news from the EU. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.